CITR.ca.
Good morning, CHRY listeners. This is Ome Salma Rahamtullah taking you through the next half hour. I have a very exciting guest joining us today. Her name is Anjali Guerra Roy. She's a professor of at the Indian Institute of Technology in Kharagpur, India. And she's joining us today to talk about a very interesting project that she's working around Bollywood and Indian-Canadian relationships. So Anjali, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Ami, for inviting me to your show. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to learn more about the community and also share my views with the community here.
And Anjali, what brings you to Canada is a project that you're working on, and it involves Canadian-Indian relationships through Bollywood, which sounds very interesting. Can you tell us a bit more about this project?
Oh, well, this is a project funded by the Indo-Canadian Shastri Institute. It's a collaborative research project, which means that there is a Canadian element and an Indian element. And this is... I think the second year, which when it's been awarded. So my project is really on Bollywood's role in promoting India-Canada relations. There are two of us in India working on the project. I'm the coordinator of the project, but I have an Indian collaborator who's the director of the Diaspora Center at the Indira Gandhi National Center for the Performing Arts and I have two Canadian collaborators, Nandi Bhatia and Teresa Hubel. So they are my collaborators here, and we're going to look at how and what role Bollywood plays in improving relations between India and Canada.
That sounds really interesting, especially because Bollywood has become more and more mainstream, I think, in Canada as the years have gone by. You know, Bollywood, of course, being the cinema of India, and it's been, it's a really old industry in India. It's not something that's new. It's been around for decades and decades, but becoming, I think, more mainstreamed. So not that it's new to Indians in Canada, I think, but more so even to non-Indians in Canada. That's definitely a trend that I can personally see. But for you, what if you could tell us a bit about what have you found already? What is the role of Bollywood in Canadian-Indian relations?
That's really interesting what you said about Bollywood having become mainstream. We are at a very early stage of our project, and that's one aspect of our project I'm not really in a position to talk about, mm-hmm. because I simply don't have the fieldwork. Because my understanding was, when I the hypothesis we began with is that, yes, Bollywood has moved outside India. That's the first mm-hmm. Hypothesis. Now, when we say Bollywood has moved outside India, I was informed that Bollywood's travels don't necessarily mean that they have moved into the mainstream. Because a lot of people have told me that it hasn't really mainstreamed. It's become a very big outside India because of the large Indian diasporas, okay. who continue to be very loyal audience for Bollywood. But my own findings, which was very interesting on my last visit when I did part of the project work, was that one thing is very certain is that Bollywood seems to be just Indian cinema. And for me, that is very exciting. When we say India-Canada relations, that's a crucial part. Let's look at what do we mean by Canada relations. Are we talking about the relations between India and the Indian diaspora in Canada? Or are we talking about the larger Canadian community? Those are issues I need to narrow down and see. Certainly, there is an awareness, and there is no doubt about the popularity of Bollywood cinema among the Indian community. Okay, and I'd like to extend it by saying that it's not just the Indian community. It's my findings show that Bollywood is a shared, is a space which is shared by Indians, people of Indian origin, and but also twice migrants like yourself, people who have not come directly from India, but say who've come from UK or from Africa, like you, yeah. They, but also other South Asian communities, such as Pakistanis or Sri Lankans. So I had this very interesting conversation between with students at U Toronto, where it was a very, very female kind of conversation in the food court, where we had Ismaili Muslim from Africa, originally from Gujarat, a Pakistani Punjabi, and a Sri Lankan Tamil, exchanging notes on the latest Bollywood release. I don't remember which one it was, but all of us were talking about, all of them were talking about the same film, Ooing and Aying, about Shah Rukh Khan. I'm sure Shah Rukh Khan was the hero of the film, and singing, humming songs from the film. So for me, that was very interesting, because on one hand, particularly with Pakistan, you know, we have this, we are enemy countries. But sadly, in the diaspora, that's what became very interesting, that it was the shared culture between India and Pakistan, which dissolved the differences, the national boundaries. Probably the diaspora space forces you to do that. Mm-hmm. But Bollywood becomes one component through which there's conversation can be create. Conversation is possible between different South Asian communities. So while in the real spaces, I make a distinction between the real differences, which are still seem very, very important to people, even in the diaspora, like who's a Hindi, who's an Indian, and who's a Pakistani. But when it comes to Bollywood, sadly, those boundaries don't seem to matter. And everyone seems to participate equally by singing Bollywood songs or dancing to Bollywood music and watching Bollywood films.
Mm-hmm. And what is your research going to consist of in Canada? I know that you said you're in the beginning stages, but if you had some, what you hope to maybe do with your research here?
What do we hope to do with our research here? Part of our project was that it wouldn't be just an academic exercise. We've had a number of lectures, workshops, with universities, with students in the university. I had a couple of lectures with students at the University of Western Ontario, London. And I also gave a talk last year on Planet Bollywood.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. And the year before, I talked about, I gave a commentary on a film by a South American documentary filmmaker who talks about the other side of Bollywood. So I gave a talk to Marshall McLuhan Fellows, mm-hmm, on how Bollywood works, how it's different from Hollywood, or how it works in a very different way from the Hollywood film industry, and how what he was saying about, you know, this documentary. So it was a very nice juxtaposition of the South American response to the other side of Bollywood, which was really the most sleazy side of the production part of Bollywood, because you have a very finished project which looks like very rosy, but what really happens behind the scenes. And then you have the, so that was really interesting. 2 years in a row, I've been talking to Marshall McLuhan Fellows, mm-hmm, about Bollywood. And the last year, we talked about Planet Bollywood and how Bollywood becomes that ecumenical space where people can dissolve boundaries, national, racial, gendered, class, and come together in that space. So it becomes like a different earth, a different planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something we plan to do. But part of the exercises to make our findings, we've also published some papers. We had a major conference a couple of months ago on which was called From Bombay to LA, the Travels of Indian Cinema. We had an exhibition, we had a conference, and we're going to publish the conference papers. So that's one part, the publications, the lectures and talks, and finally events like this, where we'll be able to share our findings and possibly also hear what people have, the general community in Canada, not just the South Asian community, but the community in Canadian people in at large. What do they think about Bollywood, if at all?
And on that note, this would be a good time for us to invite participation from our listeners. Anjali is definitely here to learn from us. We have a very unique community, the CHRY listening community. And so if you're interested in what Anjali is saying and wanted to give her feedback on your experience with Bollywood here in Canada, where can they email you, Anjali?
Thank you. I would love that. I would like to have responses not only from the South Asian community, but also from others, because I have a lot of anecdotal evidence about people in different parts of the world. In fact, only yesterday I was talking to an African, an academic of African descent, a black African academic, who's telling me about how he grew up watching Bollywood films. And, you know, this is a person I would never have met, but it was in the space of Bollywood cinema when we swapped stories about why we like Sholay and why we didn't like Sholay, and why he found Sita or Geeta, why he found Hema Malini so beautiful. You know, this is like a public sphere being constructed through Bollywood cinema. No, because people who might never have met, they're talking about Bollywood films. They have so much in common. From Africa to Malaysia, where Shah Rukh Khan has become a Datuk. Recently, he's been made a Datuk. And, you know, I have a lot of anecdotal evidence about people telling me about how they went to remote parts of the world, like a small place called Cusco in Colombia, probably. And a little girl coming up to my friend and asking him if he knew Shah Rukh Khan.
I have a bit of an anecdote. When I was living in... where was it? I think it was in West Africa, in Burkina Faso, either Niger, and people would ask me, are you Colombian or are you, you know, and First Nations? I'm like, no, I'm of Indian descent. And they're like, Indian? Like, you know, First Nations? This would be the response that would make people understand. I'd be like, no, Indian, like, kuch kota hai. And everyone would understand.
That's really...
And kuch kota hai being, for those who don't know, a very popular Bollywood song. So to... kind of express, you know, what my, you know, quote-unquote ethnicity or my ancestry was, I'd have to quote a Bollywood song. And this was in West Africa. And this was how people would understand what my ancestry was.
No, thanks for confirming my findings, because you've lived there. You know how it was like. I have only anecdotal information. I have only secondary information about how big Bollywood is, not only in India or in Pakistan or rest of South Asia, but Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. Someone from Cambodia said there's a lot of interest in Cambodia, mm-hmm. in Bollywood cinema. In Indonesia, you know, the Malay people in Singapore, they're crazy about Shah Rukh Khan. Shah Rukh Khan seems to bring the world together. Poor man, but he seems to have a following all over the world. Now, I would like to look at the three waves of, if I may call them.
Just before we start, actually, Anjali, if you could give us your email address. So if people have other anecdotal stories that they would like to share, either from Canada or from anywhere of the world, Anjali would really appreciate it and really help her research and our understanding of, you know, spaces like Bollywood, what they play. So what is that email address, just before we move on?
The email address is agera_2005@yahoo.com. So agera_2005 2005 at yahoo.com.
And we'll be repeating that throughout the rest of this interview.
Yes.
But sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, I was saying that I would welcome feedback on Bollywood from people from any part of the world, wherever you are from. And if you have a weakness for Bollywood films, which I do, I'd love to share them. I would love to have you share your views on Bollywood with me. What does Bollywood mean to you, if at all it means anything? Did you watch Bollywood films? When did you start watching Bollywood films, if at all you watched them? Where did you live when you watched them? And why did you like watching Bollywood films? These are some of the very, very basic questions I have to know the reach of Bollywood cinema. How far does it travel and why? These are the two basic questions I'm interested in. What is Bollywood cinema? How do people see it? In which parts of the world people see it? And why do they want to watch it? Particularly when there's competition from most slick films made in Hollywood. Why is it that people still display a preference for Bollywood films? I've heard that in parts of Nigeria, the Hausa people prefer watching Bollywood films rather than Hollywood films. So I would really be interested in listening to those views and why Bollywood matters, if at all it matters.
And so before we got into the emails, you were discussing the three levels of...
I was looking at the three phases of the travels of Bollywood cinema. This is all this information which people have known, but which was never, which they didn't talk about, has come to light now, particularly by an academic from Fiji called Vijay Mishra, who talks about how Bollywood would travel to Fiji as early as the beginning of the 20th century, and how these links, the links between the old Indian diasporas in Fiji, in Africa, in the old movements of people from India to different parts of the world, which were really pre-national movements, were connected to the homeland through Bollywood cinema. That because in those days when travel was not as frequent and the communication networks were not non-existent, Bollywood was the sole surviving link with the homeland, and how Bollywood films, as he says, fed these myths of the golden, you know, fed the nostalgia for the homeland among indentured workers in Fiji, in different parts of the world, because that was the soul, and how Bollywood helped to confirm this myth of a golden land, you know, a beautiful homeland. It transformed into a myth because of the fantasies, the Bollywood fairy tales somehow intersected with the myths of the homeland. So that's the first phase. And then what I would call is the second phase, which is really the national phase, where Bollywood, the popularity of Bollywood, say in the former USSR, where the stars of the 50s like Raj Kapoor and Nargis became household names. So that's the 60s era, where people would come, Russians would come, and you know, they would start singing songs from Avara, surprising the actors themselves because they never knew that they had such a big following in Russia. From the 60s, if one moves to the 70s, there is... I have people talk about the Middle East, Egypt, all over the Middle East, where Bollywood, Dubai, where Bollywood films were very big. And not only films, but the stars would go to perform at live shows in the Middle East. So you have friends or chance acquaintances coming in telling you, oh, my daughter is as beautiful as an Indian star. You know, she's as curvaceous as an Indian star. So you say, and you have this was in the 80s, and I had this friend from Jordan who would, each time he would start a conversation, his a benchmark would be Amitabh Bachchan. He would say, I had this girlfriend who left me for a man who was more handsome than your Amitabh Bachchan. So somehow, Amitabh Bachchan's tall shadow loomed very large across the world from Jhumri Thalaiya or Mumbai all the way to Jordan, where people were using him as a benchmark of male good looks.
Yeah.
Which came as a very big surprise because I didn't think that Bollywood traveled that far. Mm-hmm. And then I'd come to the 90s after DDLJ, Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge, where suddenly Bollywood is, you know, globalized the late 90s because Bollywood becomes part of one. It becomes very big because of the popularity of Bollywood films among the in the South Asian diasporas all over the world. And somehow, I don't know whether it's a trickle down effect or it's kind of suddenly it kind of spills over into the larger community. What you said, Ome, about mainstreaming, I'm not very sure about the claims of Bollywood cinema to mainstreaming, but certainly there was increased interest in Bollywood films, not only among the South Asian diasporas all over the world, but also their host communities as a result of the movement of one, physical movement of people from India or South Asia, and two, the circulation of images, including Bollywood images, over satellite television, over internet, and how this kind of mainstream, if one may call it, or at least how it created interest in the larger community, even the non South Asian community, how these films kind of created interest. Now, I don't have data on that. That's what I would like to do in my project, is to get more concrete data, not just anecdotal data, on who are the people who are watching Bollywood films. Because there seems to be a big generational divide. It's, I would say, or even gender divide. I would say that it's not that all white people are watching Bollywood films, mm-hmm. but I would say a certain segment of the non-South Asian population. I wouldn't just say white, but white, black, of every race and color, other than brown, mm-hmm. is watching Bollywood films. It seems to be an age thing. Generally, the profile of such people is younger. They're younger. It's also a gendered thing. They're more women, more female. Bollywood films, like I have this Australian colleague who said, I would do anything to have a introduction with Shah Rukh Khan. Even though we tried to scare her by saying that in real life he's not as good looking, he's shorter than you. This is a beautiful white Australian female. Mm-hmm. But she said, no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. So it's a female thing. And also, I would say, for instance, in Australia, Bollywood films, which are really popular culture in India, are shown in art house theatres, okay. and as art house cinema. Something like Hum Tum. Mm-hmm. Hum Tum is such a, you know, hardcore masala film. But that was shown as part of the film festival. They are shown at film festivals or in theatres which screen art house films. Mm-hmm. So you have a certain kind of elite audience for these films in Australia. More one of my friends said, alternative whites, well, not the regular kind of whites who go to watch these films, right? And but in UK, it is different. But I did ask someone who was, I was surprised by his knowledge of Bollywood. This was, I think, when Devdas was released, the film Devdas was released. And this was a white Englishman, an academic again, because most of my you know, my circle of friends is academics who I'm told are not like regular people. But he was so well up on Bollywood that not only had he seen Devdas, but he was totally besotted with its leading lady, Aishwarya Rai. So besotted that he was well up on the gossip, which I wasn't. Mm-hmm. This was a time when she'd had her, you know, she'd had a breakup with her former boyfriend, Salman Khan. And he said, look, if you know her, Aishwarya Rai, you can pass on this message to her. Tell her I'm available. So I was amazed. I was amazed. So I said, is this typical interest in Bollywood? Mm-hmm. And all these things I read about Bollywood Bollywood films being on top of the charts, are they exaggerated or are they true? So I was informed that yes, they do climb on top of the charts in countries like UK or even US, but the reason is not because they are being mainstream. The reason is that the people, you know, they're more moviegoers among South Asians, mm-hmm. okay, than in any other community. And because a large number of South Asians go to watch films, these films climb to the top. But doesn't necessarily mean that they're mainstreamed. So who are the kind of people who are watching these films other than South Asians? Now, it was very interesting. He mentioned that it was the multiplex culture which created kind of interest in Bollywood. Like if you go to watch a movie and you don't get tickets for that movie,
you go to the other one.
And you say, why don't you check it out? Because it's next door. So it's, I'm told in the case of non-South Asians, it's mostly curiosity or friends who introduce them. Mm-hmm. So your friend takes you along and then you develop you cultivate a taste for the masala film, just like you cultivate a taste for Indian cuisine. Yeah. It's very similar to that.
Very interesting questions, right? Is it non-South Asians watching Bollywood? Is it introduction to friends? Is it the multiplex phenomenon? I'm going to propose another one that could also be, I'm thinking maybe a possibility, the crossover between Hollywood and Bollywood. And we've seen that in very recent movies over the last 5 years, Monsoon Wedding, Pride and Prejudice, and of course this multi-prize-winning Slumdog Millionaire. I'm wondering, Anjali, do you think that there is an influence in, you know, the increase of Bollywood watching, you know, outside of India? Could that have anything to do with this crossover between Hollywood and Bollywood?
I'm so happy you asked this question because I think there's a confusion of categories. Confusion is of the nature that very often a non-South Asian audience confuse mainstream Bollywood films. By Bollywood, I mean films which are popular Indian cinema, commercial Indian cinema, produced in Hindi and in other languages. But they are out-and-out commercial films. Now, within India, one makes a distinction between the popular Indian cinema, art house, you know, more serious kind of filmmaking, art house Indian cinema, and films which are produced by people of Indian origin, like the films of like Monsoon Wedding or Water or
Hollywood.
Bollywood. But these are films made by filmmakers of Indian origin. So there's a very clear distinction, generic and also thematic, between different kinds of films. Mm-hmm. Right? But for the non-South Asian viewer, the categories don't seem to matter. Mm-hmm. And I've had people coming and telling me, oh, I love Bollywood films. But when you ask them, which is the last Bollywood film you saw, the so-called Bollywood film, and they would invariably name one of the three. It was either Monsoon Wedding or Bended Like Beckham or Bollywood Hollywood. You know, it'd be one of the three films or, more Bollywood literate. A non-South Asian audience would say, no, I've seen Water as well. I've seen Fire as well. You know, this kind of thing. And you try very hard to tell them, look, these are not considered Bollywood films. They're not proper Bollywood films. Yeah. So how does one categorize Bollywood films? Because over the years, one finds that the category one within India, between the so-called parallel, as it was called, the parallel cinema or art house cinema, art cinema, third wave, they were called third wave cinema, term which was coined in the 70s to describe films like Ankur, Manthan, Bhumika, you know, the Smita the kind of films Smita Patil and Shabana Azmi and Nasiruddin Shah, Om Puri, they specialized in. And they were that was a very parallel streams, very different from mainstream commercial or even the films of Satyajit Ray. But they were very different from the films by people like Manmohan Desai or Prakash Mehra or Ramesh Sapit. So there was a very clear demarcation. Now, over the years, we found that commercial cinema has become, I wouldn't say it's become more serious or serious cinema has become more commercial. But within India, these boundaries have kind of they've come together to a certain extent with filmmakers like Shyam Benegal, who were part of the serious cinema movement, suddenly not going commercial, but the genre itself has changed because the distinctions are not very important anymore. And then the boundaries between what is called cinema produced within India and outside India. So instead of calling them, whether one can call films by people who are of Indian origin, though they might deal with themes which are different from those of films produced in India, whether, it becomes central to the whole definition of who you consider Indian. Mm-hmm. It becomes very important in that context. So what is called the diaspora film, like Monsoon Wedding? How do we classify Monsoon Wedding? Is it a diaspora film? Is it an Asian American film? Because if Meera Nair lives in America, is she an Asian American? Would this be considered an Asian American film? Or one doesn't know how to classify it because it has audience all over the world, within India and outside India. And then you have the third category would be Hollywood films or films not in Indian languages, which are part of American or British popular culture, like which have some ingredients which are Bollywood, you know, which the film which really started it was not Slumdog, it was Moulin Rouge.
I don't know this one.
The one where Baz Luhrmann, yeah, his film where he used the musical.
Yeah,
he borrowed the form of the Bollywood and that play, that adaptation of Hum Aapke Hain Kaun. What was that? Something about which Andrew Lloyd Webber produced the Broadway musical, which was influenced by Hindi films. Okay. I'm very bad at names. I can't remember. Okay. Yes.
But like the Slumdog style.
Seven Songs and a Wedding or something it was called. Okay. Yeah. And then you have The Guru, which was atrocious film, I thought.
Terrible, yeah.
Yeah, terrible film. And Slumdog Millionaire. I'll reserve my judgment on Slumdog Millionaire because I've just spoken about it last week in Singapore.
I have not even seen the movie yet.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to talk about it. But that's in terms of categorization, that's a film which borrows heavily from, Bollywood. Mm-hmm. What kind of borrowing? So how Bollywood becomes mainstream? If we say that the so-called mainstream filmmakers like Danny Boyle uses motifs from Bollywood. Mm-hmm. So does it signify Bollywood cinema's mainstreaming? Two, if we look at recognition through awards as a form of mainstreaming, Slumdog Millionaire winning so many awards, is that a reflection? But I would qualify it because Slumdog Millionaire is not a Bollywood film. Mm-hmm. Now, if we could claim that Bollywood has mainstream, if it won, something like Alagaan, or Tare Zameen Par, or if one of the films which were nominated for the Oscars, even if they won under the foreign film category, they would not be mainstream. Mm-hmm. Now, for a Bollywood film to be to be nominated for an Oscar, that's still a long way, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Or even in the screening. Even the screening of films, where do Bollywood's films get screened? Do they get screened in theatres which are frequented only by South Asians? Or are they screened by mainstream theaters. Who are the people who are watching them? Mm-hmm. Now, there was this film which was Warner Brothers production, I think, the new one. So this notion of production and how production has become mainstream through major studios like Warner Brothers and Columbia Pictures, putting in money to produce Bollywood films. Chandni Chowk to China was one such venture.
Yes.
Okay. Now, if that is a reflection of, there is certainly interest in Bollywood cinema, otherwise someone like Columbia Pictures or Warner Brothers wouldn't put their money on a film like Chandni Chowk to China.
Mm-hmm.
So that certainly happened, but it's just a small step, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would say that, suppose you're on your two films, a film, a hardcore, a masala Bollywood film running neck to neck with running in the same multiplex as Slumdog Millionaire, you'd find that the hall, even if it's a smaller hall in the multiplex, and people watching, going to watch Chandni Chowk to cinema, is not even half full.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the component of the people who are watching, it's 90% Asian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you go to Slumdog Millionaire, it's like it's running house full, and the diverse mix of people who goes to, you can see emerging, the stream of people emerging out of Slumdog Millionaire.
I think that, I mean, Slumdog Millionaire in itself was such a huge hit in Toronto. But of course, we won't get into that. We'll stick with, our topic. And I wanted to ask you, I guess, one final question before we run out of time. But have you ever thought maybe about, and this is coming out of my own experience, so I'll share it with you, and you could definitely comment on it. But for me, not being from India or even South Asia, but being of Indian ancestry, right? Like I'm fourth generation, fifth generation East African, but of Indian ancestry. We didn't grow up watching Bollywood. My mother definitely did watch Bollywood, but when we moved to Canada, you know, my parents didn't really have an interest in Bollywood. I never watched Bollywood. But as I got older, I felt like I needed to watch Bollywood. Because I needed to have, in Canada, I needed to have a very clearly defined Indian identity. You know, mm-hmm. that we were talking about this before. Mm-hmm. And I think this has, I mean, we don't have to get too much into it, but it has a bit to do with, you know, how multicultural policy or the culture of multiculturalism insists that you have an understandable and a knowable ancestry, right? So to say to someone, I'm of Indian ancestry from East Africa, is not something that can be acknowledged, that can be understood. It's easier to say, you're Indian. Right? So I think I felt, not that pressure, it's not so in your face, but, you know, needing to build an Indian heritage, an Indian ancestry. And I, you know, I had to turn to Bollywood. What else would be a representation of India? There's nothing in my family that is a clear representation of India except for, you know, our brown skin, but all our experiences, our stories, our memories all come from East Africa, right? We are African. And so I went, in a short part of my life, you know, a short period in my life, I turned to Bollywood for answers to show me what it meant to be Indian. And I quickly learned that, you know, this is not what it means to be Indian. But there was a time when I was like, I would force myself to watch Bollywood movies. I would force myself to try to turn off the subtitles to try to understand Hindi. I mean, I speak an Indian language, but it seemed to be Hindi was not Indian language, that definition of what it meant to be Indian in Canada even, right? So I guess my question then to you is, does Bollywood then define what it means to be Indian in the Indian diaspora? I'm sure it might even play a role in India, but we clearly know that these Bollywood, you know, a bit fantasies are not what, you know, the normal Indian life is like. And so does that create a false perception for people like us who are of the Indian diaspora? There's so many more, you know, kids being born in Canada who are of Indian ancestry, have never even been to India or weren't even born in India, right? Is Bollywood then feeding them what it means to be Indian?
Thanks, Ami. You've answered the question yourself, mm-hmm. in a way. Because That's the what does Bollywood mean to people outside India? Does it become the sole signifier of India, or a very essentialist vision of India? Though it's fantasy, yeah, you know, it's fairy tales. It's not a realistic representation of India, unlike art house cinema, and yet it becomes synonymous with India in the imagining of people who've never had any connection with India. So to that, I would say the first discovery and the amazing discovery I made after observing how much importance Bollywood had in the life of people in the diaspora, mm-hmm. that was really amazing, because of course, Bollywood is ubiquitous in India as well. You cannot escape Bollywood. You might like Bollywood, you might not like Bollywood, but you can't get away from it. Because all our lives, to some extent, Bollywood has kind of dominates the Indian emotional imaginary, as someone called it. And you can't really escape from Bollywood wherever in your lives or in popular culture, because 70% of the content of even Indian television is film-based, or fashions, or media. There is Bollywood looms. Bollywood is very large. At the same time, there's a very clear understanding, even the most ordinary people, the masses, the so-called non-literate masses in India, even they know Bollywood is not India. They love watching them, but they know the difference between between the virtual and the real. So as a result of it, Bollywood's function in India is very different. Bollywood in India is taken as pure entertainment. Everyone knows it's not serious stuff, but everyone enjoys it, irrespective of caste, class, gender, ethnicity, religion. Mm-hmm. That's one thing everyone has in common language, So what is amazing for me is, one, that it should have such a major role in the diasporic imaginary. That's the first discovery I made. And two, that diaspora should take Bollywood so seriously. These are two things. And now that is to do with what you said about this need to find roots, the need to discover third or fourth generation Indian about what it means to be an Indian. And suddenly Bollywood answers that need, even though it's only a representation of India. Even so, I guess even if you knew this was only a representation, it would still have a role to play in your life. So how do symbols, cultural symbols, and in Bollywood, I must remind you, it's a very not a marginalized, but it's a very denigrated, disavowed aspect of Indian culture, part of the low disavowed Indian culture, which people would rather not talk about. I mean, not openly confess to liking. And how even disavowed symbols of culture can play such an important role in identity formation anywhere, particularly in the diaspora. So that is very interesting for me. First when I used to watch people watching Bollywood films, I thought it was they had the same objective as they had in India. You just go to a Bollywood film to have a laugh or enjoy some kind of entertainment or have fun. But I realized how seriously, how, like you yourself said, you try to learn Hindi conversation, because that was your return to India in a way. So I was amazed by that while people might be doing the same things, watching films, dancing to Bollywood music, singing Bollywood songs, but the meanings are very different to people in India, within India and outside India. Like when people dance at Besharam nights, which you told me about, it's more than just dancing. It's pure, more than pure entertainment. It's much more than that, because it's a claim to a space within Canadian public space, which is from where South Asian youth are excluded. And this is like staking a claim to that space, saying we also belong, and it's like wearing a turban for a Sikh or wearing a hijab for a Muslim woman, to say that I have a right to be what I am. Mm-hmm. You know, so simple gestures like this can be very, very big space clearing gestures. So in that context, I think if Bollywood is taken, I have no problems with Bollywood being taken seriously, but if Bollywood images are taken as definitive images of India, you know, or essentialist images of India, then I think there is a larger burden on Bollywood producers, mm-hmm. that it's the onus is on them to make sure that, because images have such a large role, and now, you know, how identities or subjectivities are represented outside or to oneself, they have such a large role in how people see themselves. So I think there's a greater responsibility on them. I mean, as art, you don't demand that art be realistic. There can be art anywhere which is not realistic, mm-hmm. but since there's a confusion, particularly in the second generation diaspora, that this is the real India, so I think there is a responsibility which that Bollywood producers must recognize.
And this is a key point again to mention, that Anjali is looking for your stories, just like one that I was able to share with her about, you know, what is that role of Bollywood, especially in the diaspora, not even necessarily with the South Asian diaspora. It could be non-South Asians as well. So I'm going to give you another chance to give your email address. So, you know, even if it's a small anecdote, even if it's a question, you know, Anjali is really looking for that. That's why she's here in Canada to do this research. So if you could give us your email address again.
I look forward to your responses at agera_2005@yahoo.com.
agera_2005@yahoo.com. And I wanted to continue this conversation by asking you about a talk that I was able to attend that you gave last year about Planet Bollywood, and you built on it a bit, but if you could expand on what that means. I think it's a really kind of important concept or an important idea that you came up with, that how Bollywood creates this kind of different planet where everyone can let go of these differences for a second, and not in a disillusioned way. It's not an equalizer by any sense of the imagination, but it's somewhere else that you can go. I guess that's the way I kind of understood it. But if you could explain to us what you mean by Planet Bollywood.
Yeah, this is a theory I've been building on, and it seems to be confirmed by evidence I've received and by conversations I've had with people from all over the world, is how Bollywood films, watching Bollywood films or dancing to Bollywood songs and dances, become a space which is a very eclectic space. When we talk about these new spaces being constructed in the new global process, which are really boundary crossing, which cross boundaries of all nature, like those of gender, class, caste, nationality, race, color, all kinds. And if one thinks of examples, I think Bollywood is one such space, because to belong to this planet, to Bollywood planet, you don't need passports, you don't need visas, all you need is literacy, Bolly literacy, I would call it Bolly literacy. So if you're one up, if you're familiar with the new Bollywood hit, you know that you are up on the Bollywood gossip, you know the rules which structure Bollywood films, and the right etiquette for watching Bollywood films, like what is right, how do you watch Bollywood films. I think anyone is welcome to that space, which I call Bollywood Planet. Bolly citizens are different from other citizens, that they think sentimental, melodramatic romances, which is how someone has described Bollywood films, are as good as any other form of culture or any other form of entertainment through which one can cross differences of any kind. I don't think there is a... I would hate to use a politics, really, because it's just like when we talk about the new... Isn't it somebody called Thomas Mafuselli who talks about emotional communities, the new emotional communities, and talks about how the communities would of the future will not be essential communities, but really communities of interest, elective communities, mm-hmm. that you're not what you are born, but you could choose to be what you are, depending on by coming together with people who share your interests. So for me, Bollywood planet is a planet which is constructed by, which is made by, created by people who share an interest in Bollywood. There could be other communities, but Bollywood is a growing bigger and bigger, becoming planetary in so far as you have people of all races, all colors, all classes coming together to sing and dance to Bollywood songs or share views in Bollywood films on YouTube. You find people saying, "I'm from this country," and I guess I would illustrate it by saying I can give examples of these friends, a Cameroonian and a Nigerian, both theater, noted actors from that country, singing Eiji Oji from Ram Lakhan. It's amazing. And then these are the old Bollywood addicts, because this is an 80s film. Right. Mm-hmm. And my new friends, an American, a Canadian, an Australian, singing Kuch Kuch Hota Hai. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or even an 80-year-old Australian singing Pretty Woman. So for me, it becomes a very interesting thing that people who come from so many different spaces on the planet can suddenly come together in the Bollywood planet and create a new kind of community. Whether this community or people who belong to this community will have any impact on the inequalities outside, because Bollywood is still a very Bollywood planet is a very virtual community or a very utopian community, but whether it'll have an impact outside, will it really solve problems in the real lives of people? That's something debatable, but at least it opens up the possibilities for people to come together.
And I'm speaking with Anjali Guerra Roy, who is a professor at the Indian Institute of Technology in Kharagpur, India, and she is working on a Shastri project between India and Canada, and looking at the way Bollywood is building relationships between India and Canada. And we've spent the past hour having a really, really great conversation about the influence of Bollywood and the different roles that Bollywood could play in India and outside India, and also in the Indian diaspora. So it's been a really, really intriguing conversation. And before we go, Anjali, I just wanted to know if you wanted to add any last words.
I would like to help people answer my question. Is Bollywood going to take over Hollywood? And if you could help me answer this question by sending in your responses, perhaps together we could answer this question. Yeah. Is Bollywood the new culture of the future? Mm-hmm. Is Bollywood the new voice of the 21st century? Mm-hmm. Is it going to drive Hollywood out of business? And why? Mm-hmm.
And really interesting also questions that we've been able to pose during this interview. And if you would like to get into the conversation, we definitely, definitely encourage you to email Anjali. It's AGERA_2005. yahoo.com. Even if you have questions or have anecdotes, references, whatever it would be, to add to this really collaborative project. I think that's also really important about the way that Anjali is doing this research. It's, you know, partnership between Canada and India, and there's a lot of participation in very different fields. As she mentioned, she'd been doing public lectures, you know, research, doing radio shows like this. Last year's, or the year before, she did a workshop at Mehndi Masala Masti, which is the annual South Asian festival that takes place at the CNE. So we do invite you to get involved if you're South Asian or not South Asian, or, you know, just share your thoughts with us, with Anjali. Again, it's AGERA_2005@yahoo.com. And we are actually going to leave you now with a song from a Bollywood movie, a really popular Bollywood movie. We're going to listen to Kush Kush Hota Hai. And thank you very much for joining us here today. And we were speaking, of course, with Anjali Guerra Roy about the influence of Bollywood globally. Thanks for tuning in. This is CHRY 105.5 FM.
आए यूं मुस्कुराए तुम पास आए यूं मुस्कुराए तुमने न जाने क्या सपने दिखाए तुम पास आए यूं मुस्कुराए तुमने न जाने क्या सपने दिखाए अब तो मेरा दिल जागे न सोता है क्या करूं हाय कुछ कुछ होता है क्या करूं हाय कुछ कुछ होता है क्या करूं हाय कुछ कुछ होता है आए यूं मुस्कुराए तुमने क्या सपने दिखाए अब तो मेरा दिल जागे ना सोता है क्या करूं हाय कुछ कुछ होता है
क्या करूं हाय कुछ कुछ होता है
Bravo. Yes, indeed.
This is going to make your world a lot different than the one I grew up in.
You know what?
CITR.
And?
Sure, it's over there.
And over there is where that sound is coming from. Right, Mr. Marconi?
Through the air, across the ocean. The first time ever.
I imagined what it would be like to be a wizard, and then I pretended and acted in that way on the day.
Studies show that 9 out of 10 wizards prefer CITR 101.9 FM.
If we were to draw a graph of my process, of my method, something like this, Sir Ian, action, wizard, you shall not pass, cut! Sir Ian.
Hey, Gordon, have you ever heard of Vasily Arkhipov?
No, I don't think I've ever come across that name.
Well, he's not very famous. I think he has 41 likes on Facebook right now. One of those people is me. But on October 27th, 1962, he might have saved the world.
So October 27th was the peak of the crisis, the closest that the world ever came to nuclear war.
I was speaking with Thomas Blanton, the director of the National Security Archive at George Washington University, the world's largest non-governmental library of declassified documents.
On the submarine B-59, it had been traveling from the Arctic. Terrible conditions. The temperatures inside the sub.